Hey guys, it's Chris Hayes. I am in my car because it's raining and I'm not on my bike. Random thing that I've been meaning to talk to you guys about. You have stopped saying ba'adi every time you say body, and because my brain has been permanently broken by your show, it drives me crazy when you guys say body but not ba'adi. So I just wanted to raise that with you so that you could go back to saying ba'adi. All right, power up. TBTL.
Today I'm going to be discussing an activity that some of you might find embarrassing. However, I assure you, there is nothing to be ashamed of.
Remember, this is not a competition, although you two seem to be the best in the class.
We hope to bore people across the spectrum of their ability to hear, see, taste, smell. You name it, we'll bore you with it.
Were you just using a synthesizer?
Nope.
So you mean to tell me that all of those sounds were coming from your ba'adi?
Yup.
I'm the president of rap music, and I need to work with you right away.
All right, hello, good morning, and welcome everybody to a Wednesday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Notice me, senpai, notice me.
My name is Luke Burbank, I am your host.
They were trying to say I was drunk. I drank 8 beers yesterday. That was all I drank.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill, Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. Truth be told, I did not have 8 beers last night. I've been being very healthy. My ba'adi, there it is. It worked. My ba'adi is a temple. I actually meditated this morning.
Time is a flat circle.
My therapist said, why don't you consider putting the meditation app on your phone next to TikTok? Which is a very sage piece of advice, and I did it and it worked. I spent some time this morning just being mindful and kind of aligning everything for a good day here on episode 3271 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
Officials in Massachusetts have asked people to stop calling 911 over a mysterious something in the water.
Louis, what is that? What is? I'm like, I don't know. What is it?
This story has so many dazzling details. Yeah, I'm very excited to share it all with you. And it, of course, has echoes of past stories right here on TBTL. Speaking of past stories, I got something very wrong on yesterday's show.
You know what I've found over the years is that the facts are your friends.
Regarding the television show that claims to be from beautiful downtown Burbank. So we will correct the record on that. Oh, and speaking of television.
Television is no friend of mine.
I'm not kidding when I say that I had a date on my calendar. It was October 7th. Circled. Because that was when this documentary was dropping on HBO that I was beyond excited about. And now I'm beyond underwhelmed. And for some reason, I need to just let everybody know that I didn't like this one documentary as much as I thought I was going to. Because that's the kind of thing we talk about here on TBTL. Also, my friend Andrew has been dealing with a certain fashion situation.
Underwear, mama!
We're going to find out more about that as well. Speaking of Andrew, speaking of the longest-running Cobra of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships, he's the assistant to the president of rap music, but he also needs to talk to you right now. He is Andrew.
I'll say, what's up, dog?
Walsh. And he's joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Well, that's a real honor. I don't think I've ever had Susie Burbank introduce me before. This is
It sounded
quite
vaguely
a run.
Rap-ish to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I said he's the I was going to say you're the president of rap music, but then I guess that was already sort of taken in the previous tape.
Yeah.
So then I said you're the assistant too. But just doesn't this kind of feel like this could be if my mom dropped a mixtape?
I'll say, what's up, though?
Oh, absolutely. Arms crossed, 1980s yes. style across her chest.
Sure.
Yep. Backwards sure. baseball cap. I did something during your intro that would horrify you.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. I drank a whole glass of juice. Just wait. That you would see that as wasted calories, would you not?
No, I'm kind of off of that now. I have moved on to a new system of complete and total self-denial of never doing anything out of hunger, not even eating. And then never doing anything out of not eating, i.e. no calories and then all calories. But when it's all calorie time, sure, I'll mess with some juice. Here's the thing, though, that I do find possibly upsetting. You also have coffee, right? You said you were going to refill your coffee. Are you toggling between juice and coffee right now?
No, I'm toggling between juice, coffee, and water. I got three beverages. I'm triple fisting it.
Does the water go in between, please tell me it does, the juice and the coffee?
I don't really map it out, Luke. It's like jazz. You learn the basics, and then you go
forget
with the
it.
Flow. You just see what comes. Yeah, but you seem to have an issue
like
with
Ray
two.
Donk?
With two is, well, it's no Ray Donk, but he was in the Colgate Comedy Hour. You seem to have an issue, I'm going to guess, with the acidity of the two.
There's something, I mean, about the flavor of juice. What kind of juice is it? That's an important
cranberry.
Point. What are you? Did you skateboard into the studio listening to Fleetwood Mac today?
It's actually a cheap brand. It's not even Ocean Spray. It's some knockoff brand cranberry juice that I consider it my miracle juice because I went to a little convenience store that is in my neighborhood, but it's a place that I feel really bad for because it's like this big awkward space that's it's kind of like dirty and not great in there. But I think it's just like a small family that runs it. I don't know. Small family, maybe it's a big family, but it's like a family run place, and I like to support it just because, you know, I don't want it to become a CVS or whatever. So I always have mixed feelings when I go in there, but it's pretty janky as far as these types of stores go. And the other day I went in there to get a six pack, and then what I look down and I see some cran grape juice, and again it's not Ocean Spray flavored.
I just have to give you the official cranberry soundtrack. Any cranberry juice, regardless of brand, this is now what plays in everyone's head.
So here's what I saw. I saw a bottle of cran grape juice and two bottles of pomegranate juice. And I was like, I don't really want any of that. But if one of you was just a cranberry juice, I would buy you. I would take you home. I would adopt you. And I was like, what a bummer. But then I was like, well, let me just look. So I crouch down. I open up the glass door.
Crouch cream?
I look behind the pomegranate juice. And what's hiding behind the second pomegranate juice but a straight-up janky-ass brand of cranberry juice. So I took that, and I got my beer, and I went on my way. And then I forgot about it for a week. And then just now, when I went to grab my coffee and my water, I saw it in the refrigerator. And I said, well, you probably want to come into the studio with me, don't you? I also poured it on ice, which is a weird move that I do with juice now that I did not do as a kid.
I have so many questions about this. One, have you always anthropomorphized juice in this fashion? Where you're talking to it, you're in the aisle, you're crouching, you're like, no, not you, Palm. But maybe if you had a friend who was just cranberry. Oh, there you are. You were hiding. Oh, look at you in my refrigerator. I'm bringing you in to listen to me co-host a podcast. Is this your relationship with juice products?
Quarantine's affected all of us in different ways.
In different ways. Okay, that's question number one. Question number two. Was cranberry juice on your mind because of our national obsession, because of Dogface 420 and his moment?
No, I think in this that happened to me a couple of weeks ago when that was new, when that was kind of newer. But I think, well, let's just be honest. I think what was on my mind was a vodka drink when I got home that evening.
Oh, really?
I think that was last Friday, and I saw it, and I was like, ooh, that. I'm in there to buy beer, but then I see the pomegranate juice. I think it's cranberry juice for a second. I don't talk to it because I'm not a psycho. I just see it as an object, and I'm like, okay, that's an object that
calm
I don't
down.
Want, pomegranate juice. And then, but it did plant the idea of like, ooh, a little Cape Codder would be nice. So then that's when I checked to see if there's cranberry juice back there. So it was actually my advanced alcoholism that was pushing this.
Is there another factor too? Do you have a urinary tract infection?
Not anymore. Thanks, off-brand cranberry juice.
Oh, wait, why did I laugh
to
over
it again.
That?
I'm talking to it again.
You really? I think that you might need to see somebody about that. Cranberry juice in my mind is not as problematic in the morning alongside coffee as orange juice would be. When you say juice at this hour of the day as we're recording this, what comes into my mind is that classic balanced breakfast that the cereal commercials told us was what we were supposed to be having every morning, which was extremely elaborate if you think about it. It was the bowl of cereal. It was toast. It was often milk and orange juice, not coffee because it's mostly for kids. But orange juice, if I drink orange juice on the rare occasion that I do, I got to clear out a couple of hours before I eat anything, before I do anything else because of, yeah, the acidity. Really, the issue is more going into the orange juice experience. So, of course, if I've brushed my teeth, that's a real situation. You know, to go from, like, having just brushed your teeth to drinking orange juice, that's intense. And really, any other thing, like, yeah, I just don't. I would want to drink the water in between to cleanse the palate is what I'm trying to say here.
Mm. Yeah, no, I haven't actually even cracked open the water yet. It's sitting over here just looking at me jealously as I sip the cranberry juice, which is why would something be jealous of being consumed? It probably doesn't want to be consumed. I'm going to work on my beverage universe. Let me ask you a question. In all honesty, pretend I am not the dentist. Don't lie to me. Be honest. It's just you, me, and tens of listeners. How many times a day do you brush your teeth? Based on what you just said, it sounds like you are very regular about brushing your teeth in the morning. Is that true? And do you also brush them at night?
Definitely, before I go to bed and when I get up at a min. And then sometimes in the middle of the day if I'm looking for a pick-me-up or if I just have kind of a weird taste in my mouth. I have also...
Is that you or me? Do you hear that? Oh, you know what happened? I left the voicemail box open on my computer.
Right now?
Yes, and I hung up on them. But
is
also,
it the treasurer of rap music?
Oh, man. That makes me wish I could have taken that call. I can't explain it. Even though everybody could hear that ringing, there was no way for me to answer that in a way that all three people, whoever the caller was, and me and Luke would have been able to all hear each other because of this tech setup. But God damn it.
That reminded me of the
Thon. I got to get on that. Yes, I need to get on that. I want to take calls so bad, Luke.
So much cranberry juice, so much off-brand cranberry juice to peruse. Hey, by the way, what is the? You say it's off-brand. Please tell me it's called like Seaside Mist.
No, it's not. It's like I could go get it if you're at all interested. That would mean you vamping for a little bit, but I don't think it's worth it. I don't think it's funny, and it's not like trying to take a swipe at Ocean Spray. You know, it's like something Farms or something.
Ocean Farms.
Yeah, right. Seaside mm-hmm. Farms.
Ocean Farms Mist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me just correct the record from yesterday. I went on a very long kind of... disquisition on my experience watching The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson on or around Thanksgiving with James DeMuth because the phrase "a beautiful downtown Burbank" came into my mind. I believe listener Monica was checking in from Burbank, Washington, and one of the donors of the day yesterday. And I really think I've always thought that was from The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. But as people were telling us on Twitter, I guess that was from Laugh-In. That was how Laugh-In would start, was from beautiful downtown Burbank?
Apparently. Now, I saw one person send that to us, listener Maggie, Middle Shelf Maggie. Do you think there's a possibility that both, though, said that? Or do you think you – did you watch a lot of Laugh-In?
No, not at all. In fact, I'm also trying to see. You'd think I would have just looked this up before the show, but I just took Maggie and whoever it was on the internet at their word. Let me see here. I've got something that purports to be – well, this is a song called Beautiful Downtown Burbank. That was a single. What? Sorry, guys. Change of plans. There's a song called Beautiful Downtown Burbank, and we're going to listen to it by way of YouTube.
Watch it when you walk your dog.
A 45 record single from those days when songwriters inspired by Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In were composing music in honor of this San Fernando Valley community.
In that cultured new metropolis,
more glamorous,
beautiful
downtown Burbank.
Charming, respectable.
So this was a song somebody wrote based on the fact that the beginning of Laugh-In does say beautiful downtown Burbank. I always confuse Laugh-In with hee-haw.
Oh, wow. I guess I was going to say, wow, I don't, but I get that. If you had not watched either one, it's from an era of television that is a variety show, slapsticky type of thing. But Hee Haw was obviously based very much as like kind of a take on rural America and the hayseed type of situation.
Yes, I think, yeah, yeah. Minnie Pearl. I think that Hee Haw was the country, it was the sort of the rural, the Grand Ole Opry answer to Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In.
Which was kind of a pop version of like hippie culture. Like the Laugh-In was definitely like a hippie kind of thing. Which the funny thing is, I have such a warm feeling about Laugh-In and I feel like I love it. But really, I've only seen one thing, which is in the, I want to say 1980s or possibly early 90s, they had some sort of a clip show special, like retrospective of the show that was, I believe, a full 2 hours. Maybe it was just 1 hour. And I had that on VHS. So while I didn't watch tons of Laugh-In, I had one VHS that I watched quite a bit over and over because I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I totally, like, I thought of, you know, I was a little kid when Goldie Hawn, you know, was in movies and stuff. So then when I'm like a teenager and I'm looking back at these old episodes, I'm like, oh, this is why everybody fell in love with Goldie Hawn. She was like a complete ingenue on that show. Ingenue is the wrong word for a variety show, but you know what I mean.
I was like, I think I thought of both of them as being shows where people were popping out of weird small doors and saying things.
That was
laughing. That's why I kind of, here we go. This is the famous Sock It to Me.
NBC. Beautiful downtown Burbank.
Hey, look at that.
Oh, hello, Governor Rockefeller. Oh, no. I don't think we could get Mr. Nixon to stand still for a Sock It to Me.
Sock It to Me?
Man, didn't see that coming.
Wow, that guy can really deliver a line.
Yes, well, I think that was kind of... That was the joke. But can we just listen to an intro? I mean, I want to make it clear to you and Maggie and the listeners, I'm not trying to argue that this was also in the Tonight Show. Clearly, based on the description of the song you just played, like that was indelibly linked to Laugh-In, the downtown Burbank. But let's just hear what you were confusing. I found an intro to the Johnny Carson show, Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. This is from December of 1979, and let's hope.
Can I try to... Before you play it, I know this is so weird, and it's probably not the same theme, but can I try to see if I can remember what the general tune of the theme was? Right. Wasn't it? Da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da. Let's see if it's something like that. Maybe it changed over time, but that's what I remember.
From
pretty close.
Hollywood.
From Hollywood.
The Tonight Show, starring Johnny Carson. This is Ed McMahon, along with Doc Severinsen. The NBC Orchestra inviting you to join Johnny and his guests, Bruce Stern, David Letterman, opera star Judith Blagan, and our yearly look at new products. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Oh, they must have gotten that from The Shining.
Sock It to Me.
Anyway.
Hollywood is... Depending on the part of Hollywood you're in, you could be sort of over near Burbank. So maybe like one time on The Tonight Show they said that. So let's just say at this point we can't say who's right between me and Maggie.
Right, yes, or history.
Speaking of television, I'll get this off my chest quickly because I don't think anybody but me cares. But there is this documentary on HBO. It's called Wild Card. And it's about the sort of downfall of this guy named Craig Carden, who was the co-host of Boomer and Carden, which was a hugely popular morning sports talk show on WABC in New York City. And the problem was he also had a gambling problem and got himself kind of in the hole and then was moving money around between these various kind of businesses he had going. And he ended up going to jail and losing his radio job. I watch a lot of this show called Real Sports on HBO, hosted by Bryant Gumbel. And so before that was on, they were showing these ads for this documentary. And I was so obsessed with the idea of this documentary, Andrew, because as I mentioned on yesterday's show, it really brings together the great loves of my life. Sports talk radio, compulsive gambling, and HBO sports docs. And I just feel like the sports documentary... Really, the documentary game in general, the bar has been raised so high. Wouldn't you agree? Like, so many documentaries are so good now.
Yeah, I'd agree, and especially in the sports realm, the 30 for 30 series
yes.
really opened up a whole new door, and that's been around for a while now. Did you say the name of the documentary you're describing? Or did
Yeah, Wild Card.
Wild Card, okay, I glitched up.
Which I already figured out is probably because his last name is it sounds kind of like Card, although it's actually Carton, but I think maybe that was it's kind of an allusion to that. I'm not sure. I just have my expectations for particularly on a prestige network like HBO. My expectations for a documentary are now sky high. Like it's where I think some of the best filmmaking and storytelling tends to happen. And so the fact that this one was just very down the middle, very just kind of like it starts with this guy like it like just imagine this, Andrew, and I don't know why, again, I don't know why I feel the need to get into this, and I don't know why I feel the need to try to talk about how I would have done it better. But if you were going to sit down and make a documentary about a really popular radio sports host who ended up in jail over a gambling problem and you know, money laundering, essentially, and you have all this tape, you have all this great, you know, audio of the show in question, right? How do you start that documentary? Wouldn't you start it with some kind, like, first of all, maybe with him talking on the radio and just like cool shots of New York, or somebody maybe just gets in a taxi cab, they turn on a radio, and then just one shot of the cab driving, you know, around and through the Holland Tunnel and whatever. There's a million creative things you can do from a filmmaking standpoint. Instead, this documentary just starts with like, hi, I'm Craig Carton. I used to be one of the number one radio hosts in New York, but then I had a gambling problem and then I went to jail. Like it lays, it's in his voice, which is weirdly enough, the least interesting voice in the documentary. And it's just like, clearly they were worried that people weren't going to be able to follow the arc of the story unless they give you the whole story in the first 4 minutes. Then they spend a good 20 minutes establishing that he was a real loudmouth. And it's just like all these clips of him, because it was one of those sports talk shows that also is a TV show. You know, they film it as well. And so it was like they spent way too much time trying to establish that he's like a real shock jock. And then they shift to he's already in jail. They're jumping around in the timeline. And apparently in jail, he was keeping some kind of a diary. And this diary is so bad. It's like, this is day one in jail. I am here with Harden. And they have him reading it. The real guy reading from his diary now later. He's horrible at reading things. Dear diary, it's day one. I am in jail. I never thought I would ever be in jail. I miss my family. What have I done to be in jail? Oh, and by the way, the visuals are clearly a set, but a drab jail cell with a person who looks vaguely like Craig with their back to the camera moving around in the jail cell. Like, it's just full of these bad, like, reenactment shots. I mean, it was just, it's just garbage. It's also, like, mostly Chris Christie, which probably didn't help. Like,
what's Chris Christie's role?
Chris Christie is the biggest sports talk radio wannabe in the history of the Triborough area. Like, what's really funny is if you listen to I can't think of other good examples right off the top of my head, but like Chris Christie is somehow always in the. He actually has filled in and hosted sports talk shows. I think on a certain station in Jersey, maybe the same one where Craig Carton was at one point. He had a show called The Jersey Guys. But like Chris Christie is into sports, and he was, you know, a pretty big celebrity when he was the governor of New Jersey. And he was always using his celebrity status, I think, to kind of like call into sports talk and kind of be around, whether it's like the Yankees or, weirdly enough, the Cowboys. Remember that picture of him and Jerry Jones jumping up and down in the booth celebrating?
Yeah.
Which is weird because if you're from Jersey and you're a Cowboys fan, that doesn't sort of scan. But so Chris Christie is in this a lot, but you just kind of, I don't know, I'm just not a fan of that guy's work. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of just made me sad for Chris Christie, because basically it's clear that Chris Christie was like geeky. He geeks out on knowing people who are legit celebrities, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Jerry Jones or this guy from this morning show. And I don't know. I just was like, the whole time I'm watching the documentary, what my mind is doing is trying to recut it and just go like, this is a fascinating story. There's so much here. How are you doing? So how are you doing such a bad job, or how are you doing such a basic job of telling this story?
And they clearly had, you're absolutely right about the way you described the, what the intro could have been. And they clearly have all of the rights to that audio, right? Do you hear that audio later on in the documentary?
Well, here, what I know they have the rights to is the TV show, which was also the radio show. So maybe there's a different rights to what was on the radio. But what you could do is take – I mean, it's a simulcast, right? So every – because they're showing tons of clips of the radio show as it was broadcast on television. So worst case scenario, you take that and then you just play it like it's the radio show, right? I mean, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. Like they had access to the, Craig and Boomer being Craig and Boomer and talking about the Jets or – whomever or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. like they have all of that stuff. So I don't think it was that they didn't have the content. I think it was that they just decided to tell this story in the most uninteresting, to me, the most just like basic way possible. And I'm kind of surprised HBO bought it. Like even with The Vow, and I know you were saying yesterday you're not so hot on the intro sort of The Vow.
Can I actually interrupt? Because I was like thinking about that, like, because I really, really feel like you missed my point on that. Because like your reaction to my criticism of that was, oh yeah, well they try to make good intros these days. Which I know my issue isn't in the structure of the intro of The Vow. I think it's pretty effective.
I understand what you
were
saying.
It was just very, very specifically the idea that they were purposefully dirtying up tape to make it give you more of that nostalgic vibe that seemed somewhat distrustful to me. That's my
issue.
Okay.
What I was saying about making good intros was just – I was just saying it's a big point of emphasis these days. But that was a separate thought from what you were saying about the faux – the patina that was put on those clips. Like I think I picked up what you were putting down there. But what I was going to say is like The Vow – I feel like the storytelling in The Vow, the way that they use a lot of – the kind of, you know, tape that was being shot as part of these weird Nexium tutorials and documentaries, and then shots of like the people who've gotten out of the cult, just in their lives driving around in their cars. Or somebody wrote on Twitter the other day, I think Stu retweeted, somebody saying, I can't wait to watch. I don't know if you'll get this joke, Andrew. How far into The Vow did you make it? Are you?
Oh, not very far. I think I watched the first one and then was in the room for part of the second one. I'm going to go back. Like, I'm not writing it off, but I'm not that into it.
Well, this joke will not work for you, but for the listeners that are really into The Vow, this person wrote on Twitter, I can't wait to watch Catherine Oxenberg talk into a cell phone and compose emails, or talk into a speakerphone and compose emails, because the show, Catherine Oxenberg is the mother of somebody who was really caught up in Nexium, and for about 3 or 4 episodes, it seems like half of every episode is just her being filmed while she's on a cell phone with some state's attorney in New York trying to get something done. But even with all of that, like I feel like the filmmaking or the editing, the way that like The Vow is put together, and the way that, I don't know, you know, fill in the blank, any of these kind of prestige documentaries or docuseries, I just think they've gotten so good at it. And it's just weird to see one that's just like, it could have been made in 1985. Like, it's just so uncreatively put together. And then again, the end of it is just a nightmare of filmmaking. Like, the film is a nightmare. Like, it's him getting out of jail, wearing a mask because it's kind of current times, just walking across the Brooklyn Bridge, just saying, I'm ready to start my life again. Mm. But like, it's just like, I made a really bad documentary 20 years ago, but that's because I made it by myself and edited it on a Mac that I bought on eBay and didn't know what I was doing. And I would put the documentary I made, I would say it's only a little bit worse than this one.
I know nothing about this. I'm trying to Google on the fly here. But everything you're describing sounds like it comes back to the fact that this guy got to tell his story too much. Did he have a financial interest in this? Did he fund this?
I honestly thought that maybe he was the executive producer,
right,
of this.
Like Jordan. Like Jordan did his doc. So he got to tell his story.
Right. And maybe, I mean, I honestly only watched a little way into the end credits. I did Google the two people that are listed as the sort of co-directors and producers, and I hadn't heard of them before. One of them used to be a newspaper editor. I don't know if that was part of it, that this was their first try at documentary filmmaking or what. But It felt like it was. And by the way, I actually don't even think this guy seems like a terrible dude. He basically had a problem with gambling, which has happened to some of my very favorite people who are me. And he, like, what he did essentially was he got in the hole. He started this business where he was like, it was a ticket reselling business, secondary market. So if there was a sold out show, if it was Billy Joel's 29th performance in a row at Madison Square Garden, it was sold out. You know, his company would get you tickets. But then he got money from a hedge fund. He got, I think it was like a couple mil from a hedge fund to keep the business going. And instead, he gambled with some of that money, with 900,000 of it. And then, but then he ultimately bought all the tickets. Like the he continued the business as he had promised the hedge fund. The problem was there was the little moment in there where he took 900,000 of it and went to Atlantic City and the Borgata and gambled it. So it wasn't even like he really stole the money. He just used the money for nefarious purposes in a sort of in-between period, which is not allowed. You're not allowed, as they say many times in the documentary, as he admits, you can't tell someone, you can't have someone give you money for one purpose and use it for something else. That's illegal. And that's why the FBI came down on him. But I don't even really dislike this Craig dude. Like, he's just not a very complicated thinker. And the documentary is not very complicated. Like, I guess at least it kind of lines up in that way. It's just like these very basic take on life. You know, there's the point where he sort of like kind of references that he was molested at summer camp, which I'm not downplaying that at all. But it may have really been a factor in his life and his life of secrets, but they don't quite explore it enough. But they also... It's like either let's unpack this a little bit or let's leave it out. Maybe it's sort of like a passing reference. I don't know.
Yeah. Like, just, how does it fit? Like, what is your narrative? I haven't even seen this thing, but I know this feeling you have. And I'm wondering if you did the same thing when I think something is way either overrated or I've heard something great about it or I have high expectations and I watch it and I think it's really bad. I run to the internet to see if other people, like, am I insane here? Am I the only one who sees what's going on? I'm trying to think of that. What was the name? There was a, oh, shoot. Oh, The Man in the High Castle, an Amazon series, was something that I love alternative histories in fiction. Like, I just love that conceit. I was so psyched about that. And I tried watching it twice, and I think I made it halfway through the first season. I was like, wait, there are inconsistencies here, right? Like, I'm not insane. This isn't arty. Like, there are holes. Like, this
isn't what
not
happened last
exactly.
week. Have you all got amnesia?
And so I went online, and I was like, good review, good review, good review. And then I finally got to Emily Vanderwerf, who never lets me down. And I think she, like, wrote about, like, all the holes. I'm like, yes, I am seen. And right now I'm doing that for Wildcard, and, like, I'm getting irritated on your behalf. Like, somebody writing for the Chicago Sun-Times, here's one line in the review. Director, producers Martin Nunn and Marie McGovern know a good story and how to tell it. And if I had the buzzer sound, I would buzz it there based on everything you're telling me.
I've got it right here. It's just, you know what the thing is? It's not incompetent. Like, if you watched it and if you weren't somebody like me who just marinates in every documentary and docuseries that comes down the line, and I bet you a lot of people watched it and found it to be interesting. It's not even like it's not unwatchable. It just had so much potential. And again, I am talking about this from the perspective of somebody who obsesses over sports, obsesses over talk radio, and at times has obsessed over gambling. So I'm sure part of me was like, I could have been this guy if I would have taken that job, Andrew, producing the Joey Reynolds show overnight, in New York City. On WOR radio, I believe the job paid $30,000 a year in Manhattan, and the show was on the air, I believe, from 1 in the morning until 5 in the morning. Maybe it was midnight till 5. It was like 4 or 5 hours of live talk radio. And the only reason I didn't take the job was, one, because I had a kid living in Seattle, and two, I knew that was not enough money to exist in Manhattan at that time. But had I taken that job and had I moved through the world of New York talk radio, and had I somehow lucked my way into sports talk and gotten a job, I could have been Craig Garden. So that's why I take such a personal interest in it. Like, I see a person who's flawed in some of the ways that I'm very flawed. And so, again, I was just – I was – when I saw the first, like, little ad for it, I was like, that is for me. And like I said, they said coming October 7th, and I was like, note to self. So –
here's one thing I want to say here, because I just really wanted at least one person online to back you up. So the second review I found was from something called Decider.com, which I think is a website I found myself on from time to time. Do you know Decider? It looks like it's dedicated to reviewing television and movies, and they have a segment called Stream It or Skip It, and it looks like it's a pretty involved review. I can't read the whole thing on the fly here, but written by John Serba, if you skip to the bottom and for the final ruling, Skip It or Stream It, our call, Skip It, farts! Exclamation point. So the people at Decider have your back on this.
I will say, because I've already wasted a lot of everyone's time with this, can I just say, I almost want you to watch this, Andrew, for this one part that you will so appreciate. You and anybody else who works in radio will appreciate, talk radio in particular. There is the program director of this show, okay, Boomer and Carton, who's featured fairly prominently in this documentary. And he is everything that I hate about program directors who are meddling when it comes to talk radio. Like, he has zero charisma. His name, I think, is like Alan Chernoff or something. He has absolutely zero charisma, which is, you know, scans with my experience, not with every PD I've worked with, but with some. It's always weird when you have somebody who clearly has no ability to hold a room coming in and telling you how to be more entertaining on the radio. And most of the stuff this guy's talking about are annoying, tiny course corrections that he tried to make his hosts do.
Mm-hmm. They want to put their fingerprints on it.
He is talking about how all of the people that he had initially so this station had Don Imus in the morning. That was their morning show, and then Don Imus was taken off the air because of saying racist things about the Rutgers women's basketball team. And so they were looking for a new show, and they go out and they get Boomer Esiason, and he's talking about all the people he teamed Boomer Esiason up with and how it didn't work. And this person, he's like, and then they just wanted to talk about politics a little too much. So I told them, no, this isn't working. But then I brought someone else in, and then they weren't talking about it quite enough. And I was just like, oh my God, please die. So then he's like, talking, so he teams him up with this Craig Carton guy, and he's like, you know, the only thing, he goes, you know, I didn't like, I would come in and tell them during the breaks. By the way, this is the number one thing that a bad program director does, is comes in during the breaks and tries to tell you what you're doing wrong. Like, at least wait till after the show. Let's not do this during the commercials. He would come in and go, do you have to talk about farts? That's why I thought of it, because that Decider thing and said farts. He goes, I didn't really like them talking about farts. You know, I didn't think that's really what our radio station should be about. And it's like, are you kidding me, bro? Were you really actually going in and telling them talk about farting less?
Yeah, right.
Like, what an absolutely bad program director move that would be. Also, at the end, like sort of almost the end, I guess, of the whole thing, so there is a morning where this Craig Carton guy comes out of his apartment in Manhattan and is arrested by the FBI on his way to work. And so his wife has to call the station and say he's not coming in today. And so nobody knows what's going on. And so they grab the like update guy, and he's sitting in the co-host chair, and Boomer Esiason says, you know, Craig Carton's under the weather today. So then at about, I don't know, 7 or 8 in the morning, the show is still on the air. The news starts to hit the internet that the co-host has been arrested by the FBI, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Boomer Esiason is telling this story on the documentary. The program director comes in and says, don't talk about it. Whatever you do, don't mention it. And even Boomer Esiason, and a former NFL quarterback, who is, I don't think, known for his talk radio instincts as much as his being 6'4 and throwing a football far. Even Boomer Esiason is like, are you crazy? The co-host is arrested by the FBI. Everyone knows. I'm not talking about it. And so he actually does a really good job of saying, look, here's what I know. It's what I'm seeing on the internet along with all of you. The co-host of this show was arrested by the FBI.
Right.
It's crazy. I did not know that when we started the show today. Now I know it. If I had any other information for you, I would tell you. Apparently, the radio station is working with the FBI right now, so I'll keep you posted. Like, it was a very good human moment. It was probably some of the only good radio they did. And this PD was in there being like, don't talk about it. It's like, how compelled would you be as a listener? How compelled would the listeners of this show be if I was arrested by the FBI and you were hosting the show talking about, I'm getting word that Luke's been arrested by the FBI. That would be our most downloaded show.
Yes, it would. It's something to consider, actually, as
I'm not
the
ruling
ratings
it out.
Books come in. now, here's one thing, too. And again, I love that I'm having opinions on this thing that I have not seen. But I'm getting the impression that this program director is doing that self-important documentary character thing, which it's one of my least favorite things about documentaries. And that's a good hallmark of a good documentary is, and it probably just takes a lot of time and a lot of just good producing to get people to not sound like they're slipping into that parody of somebody who's being interviewed by a documentary and putting on these airs and sounding really kind of self-important. Is this program director really like kind of just in like kind of maybe not so subtle ways, kind of fluffing himself up in the history books with this thing?
He is weirdly mousy, which I know what you're talking about, which is there's like two kinds of program, not two. There are many kinds of program directors. There are the good ones who put Livewire radio on their station. And then there are the others. And sometimes it'll be somebody who clearly is a big personality and kind of you can tell either they had a show and it didn't work out or they kind of always thought I could probably do that. And they're a little puffed up and a little proud of themselves. And then there are the ones that are weirdly mousy. This guy is weirdly mousy. Hmm. He has no visible charisma. And I mean, a little bit, I think I'm sure in his mind he's taking credit for. I mean, it was a very successful talk show for the time it was on, the 10 years. Also, interestingly enough, I was surprised. So the day he gets arrested, it's just like it's over. He's never back on that station. And in my mind, I thought, you know, you might want to let him back on. It'd be a real interesting plot line for
yeah.
the show.
Yeah.
Like as a listener, and he didn't do anything violent. I mean, his crime was moving money around by a sports ticket. Like it's about as white collar as that shit gets. You know, like it's not even like subprime mortgage or something where it's people's homes. It's like it's as close to a victimless crime as you can probably get. And I don't know, if I were the PD, I think I would have been like, let's just see where this goes.
Like, who is the Seahawk? And actually,
Michael Kendricks, who had a
Kendricks. Was he a Brown first, I think, for a
he was
minute?
He yeah. was a Brown and he was good last year. Mm-hmm. when he was allowed to play for the Seahawks. He actually visited the Seahawks a couple weeks ago. And I'm like, bring dude back. I loved him. And
did
also,
he serve
again,
any time for insider trading?
He hasn't actually been sentenced yet, but the guy that he was, the sort of person who gave him the tip on the stocks, got probation.
Oh, okay.
So the idea is that, I think the thought is that Michael Kendrick, he paid the money back. He gave a very legit apology. And the thought is, I think, is that he'll probably get probation because the other guy got probation. And because he paid the money back immediately and he apologized. So, you know, I mean, that was what, not to go from sports talk radio to just legit sports talk, but that always just blew me away that, like, for all of the transgressions of NFL players towards other humans, the guy who did insider trading that he may not have even realized was not okay and then immediately paid it back and apologized, that would be the guy doing time just seemed like a kind of an unfair situation. And I don't say that because he was a Seahawk. I just mean generally.
Right. We don't have to get into it, but I also, like, when I see Quentin Dunbar's jersey out there, I'm always like, oh, yeah, you're still playing football. He was involved in something, which I can't even get a real line on what happened with that whole scandal.
Oh, I think I have a sense.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I mean, I should say I do too, although it is strange what happened in the legal system with that thing. But apparently, so do you want to explain what I'm talking about really quickly? He was involved in some sort of a robbery at a like some sort of barbecue near the beginning of COVID when people weren't even supposed to be socializing, right? And it became this whole thing of him saying, no, me and my buds were there to get our like jewelry back or our money back, and it became this whole thing. And then there was like bribing of witnesses who said, no, nothing happened, let them play football, et cetera. And then eventually the whole thing kind of got thrown out, unless it's in limbo, and I don't remember that part.
I think it's sort of in limbo, but these kinds of things, if they're in limbo for too long, they usually just sort of wither on the vine. Yeah, that you got all of the You got all the high points in there. The appearance would be that Dunbar and his pals lost a bunch of money gambling to these dudes, but felt like they had gotten ripped off or cheated in some way. So they show up at the barbecue. It's in dispute who was armed, but definitely some of the people were armed. And then they basically took back their watches, jewelry, and cash that they had lost in the initial gambling foray. So see, it ties back in with what's going on with Wildcard. But anyway, yeah, then all of a sudden a bunch of people recanted their statement to police. People who mysteriously seem to have come into some amount of money, possibly from Quentin Dunbar, but he is.
The best part of that story, and just to make it interesting for people who don't know it, the best part of the story, I thought, or at least the dazzling deet, maybe not the best part from a societal standpoint, is like a complete Lionel Hutz moment, if you're to believe the police report, which is, didn't they at least allegedly catch the lawyer for Quentin Dunbar and some of these other people red-handed, just like handing, like he had witnesses coming to his office and he was just handing them cash to change their stories?
I believe the problem was there was a series of text messages laying out the plan. I don't think that they like had them on surveillance. I think they had texts of people saying, do you have my money? I'll be downtown to pick it up, etc. Like they were not super coy with coordinating the payouts. And I believe at one point Quentin Dunbar was complaining about how this already had cost him $75,000 or something to make it go away. So anyway, all right, let's take a quick break here, and then we'll be back with Andrew's shirt situation and the mysterious sea creature lurking off the waters of Massachusetts. Stay with us. This is TBTL.
Thank you, baby.
Let's thank some donors of the day. I will try to keep this donor of the day message, this thanks, I'll try to keep it error-free. I'll try not to go down any other rabbit holes about various 1970s television programs as I thank Guillermo Ubilla of Waynesboro, VA.
Wayne's World.
That's what they call it. Guillermo, what's good, man? Guillermo and his wonderful wife brought me some famous Virginia peanuts when I was doing Wait in Richmond, Virginia. And that's a whole thing out there. There's those Virginia peanuts. And I opened the can on the long drive back to the greater Washington, D.C. area where I had to fly out early the next morning. And I think I probably put back 3/4 of that can, just fistful by fistful, thinking this is the last fistful, and then it never was.
Yeah, it never is.
Never is. Lisa Blum of Bellingham, Washington. Lisa, what's good here in the Bay City? Thank you very much for your support. Ryan Brower of Surprise, Arizona.
I love
that. The town where every day at 5:59 a.m., everybody gets behind a chair, a couch, an upright piano, and then when it turns 6, they yell, "Surprise!" And they just go about the rest of their day pretty much normal. But that is a unique ritual, I think, for that town.
I had never heard of Surprise, Arizona before, had you? It's outside of Phoenix, it looks like. Oh, you're familiar with Surprise, huh?
You don't forget a name like Surprise, Arizona.
No. I wonder if we've actually even said it before in the thank yous, and I just have forgotten about it. I don't know. I'm excited about
it. That's great, because every year when I read it for you, it's a surprise.
That's right. It's just like they used to. Didn't they do the Tonight Show from beautiful downtown Surprise, Arizona? Famously,
yes,
I think. Yeah.
Melisande Echenique of Staten Island, New York. Echenique, Melly, I should know this after what?
A zillion
years of knowing you and being your friend and appreciating your being a part of TBTL. Melly, thank you so much. Burley McIntyre of Seattle, Washington, thank you for the donation. And then Robert Peacock of Portland, Oregon. Robert, thank you as well. Thanks to everybody who supports the show. Thanks for keeping us going week in and week out here. 3,271 episodes into this thing. We would not be here without you.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
Andrew, America has just been absolutely on pins and needles, wondering. It sounds like I'm slightly negging you, and I'm not actually. I have been curious about this story, and I think the listeners have too. What is going on with your shirt situation and something with Genevieve and a low quality shirt, or you being let down by the craftsmanship of your shirts? What's happened?
Well, here's the deal. I do think that I brought this up yesterday because I wanted to change the subject, or I felt like I was out of things to say, so I was going to bring this up. So, and now we've carried it over, which isn't a great, you know, there's too much probably hype around this shirt story right now. So I'm going to punch it up with a little bit of Donovan, of course. The famous song, I Love My Shirt, off of Baraba Jaggle. And this will kind
just
of
remember,
set
Andrew,
the scene.
I just did a tight 40 on a sports talk radio gambling documentary that I'm telling people not to watch.
So, in other words, you've lowered the bar for me.
Bar extremely low, my friend, so
I
have at it.
This is one of the worst Donovan songs. Nice and still, I love my shirt. I love my shirt. My shirt is so comfortably lovely. It's from 1969, too. This is like the good years. Anyway.
I'm not trying to be mean, but
it's
honestly,
so bad.
This is what I assume every Donovan song is.
Even when I was a kid, and even at the peak of my Donovan fandom, I was like, really, D? I call him D. Like, really,
yeah.
D?
Don. Really, Don?
Okay, so actually, you know what is funny? I didn't even realize this. I'm wearing a shirt related to this story right now. So, I have...
You're wearing a shirt that's related to the story. You're not just wearing a shirt. That wasn't the big surprise.
No,
you're wearing a shirt.
Surprise. That's not Surprise Arizona that I'm wearing a shirt. I'm always wearing a shirt. You can always assume that. In fact, today I had to rush and find shoes to put on before the show because I will not do this show without wearing shoes. Too casual. So I have this shirt that I'm wearing right now, which is a shirt that especially during the height of lockdown, I was wearing this shirt almost every day, but I call this shirt one of my tonight shirts. You know, I have like one or two pieces of clothing that I will slip into when it's relax time at night. And they tend to be things that are generally regular street clothes, but a size or 10 too big. And this particular one I have, it goes back a really long time. I think I've had this shirt for over 10 years from a time when I was wearing things way baggier, even just like kind of when I was out in the world. And this particular shirt is a country western style shirt with the little pearl snaps and the kind of plaid pattern. It's a short sleeve shirt, and it's a double extra large. So it's like real comfy. I can put this on at night, and I don't feel my belly pushing out on it.
Have you
and
considered
I like
a
it.
Muumuu? And I know that sounds, again, like I'm negging you, but you're going for comfort. You want it to be – you want to be not constricted. Not a muumuu, but like a – I don't know, like a tracksuit or something. What's the ultimate comfort for you?
Well, I mean, we've talked about this before. Like, my tonight clothes are things that if there was a fire and I had to run outside, you might say, hey, that guy's wearing something that's a little bit oversized, but they're not pajamas. I don't wear sweatpants. I don't wear track pants. I don't like that kind of stuff. So I like my tonight pants that I've been rocking for, I don't know, several years now are a pair of like, they're almost like kind of bluish khaki work pants that are about probably three or four size, well, like probably like two or three sizes too big for me, cinched up with a belt. So they, you know, they don't look great, but they're not sweatpants. I don't know. I just have a thing about that kind of stuff. I don't like leisure wear.
If you had to run outside, you would the clothes would be too big, but they wouldn't be wildly outside of the norm in terms of clothes you wear.
Yeah, like the idea of being caught outside in a robe is just hell to me, so I own no robe. So anyway, it's not normal, but that's also not the point. So anyway, I have this shirt here that is a country western style shirt. It's by a company called Eli Cattleman. And the reason I know that is because I bought this shirt, you know, used from some, you know, probably a Goodwill or something. And again, I've had it for at least 10 years and I bought it used, so God knows how old this shirt is, but it has served me really well over the years, and now it's been kind of relegated to my leisure clothes, for better or for worse. And at some point during the first months of lockdown, I realized, hey, I'm wearing this shirt every single night. Maybe I should see this company, Eli Cattleman. Does it even still exist? As far as I knew, this shirt could have gone back to the 70s or 80s. I didn't know. And Eli Cattleman does still exist as a brand, as a company, and they still sell this style of shirt. And my original plan was to buy another oversized shirt, not to wear out, but actually this would have been a first for me, buying a nice new shirt that is two sizes too big so that I could actually wear it as a comfort slash tonight shirt. Usually it's, you know, something wears out and it gets relegated to that. But I go online and I'm looking at the shirts. I'm like, I actually kind of like these things. I don't see any double extra larges in here. Maybe I should just buy myself a new shirt and just wear it out. One of these, another like kind of snap down Western style shirt. So I bought one of those.
I'm sorry. Treat y'all self.
That's right.
Eli Cattleman.
Eli Cattleman.
Treat y'all self. Possible show title? I don't know.
Yeehaw. That's my imitation.
Is that a yes?
Yeah.
In cowboy?
It is. Okay. So anyway, so I buy this shirt, and I like it. It's a short sleeve. It's another short sleeve shirt. This one is not double X. It's just extra large, which is proudly my size. And I like it. I have not bought myself a new shirt in a long time. I'm hardly leaving the house these days. Like, I just feel spiffy wearing my new shirt mostly around the house, but it looked good on me, right? Ooh, I said looked good. So you already know I'm planting the seeds of what's going to happen to this shirt in the future. Well...
It's called foreshadowing.
Yes, it's called foreshirtering. So
also possibly a show title.
I don't know. I might just cut that bad joke out. So the snaps on this shirt, I realize the one I'm wearing now, my old one, I realize that the kind of the top snap is pretty loose right now because I probably have a habit of snapping and unsnapping this thing without thinking about it, probably while I'm talking to you on the show, maybe just throughout the day I'm snapping and unsnapping this thing, and so it has a little bit of trouble staying closed. But with the new shirt, that same snap, the topmost snap that I'm probably fiddling with too much, one day I'm going to take off the shirt and I tried to make a pop sound. Hold on. One day I'm going to take off the shirt and that's a little better. Hold on. One day I'm going to take off the shirt and there it is. The snap just comes off, like the back part of the snap, the part with the nub, right? It just pulls out of the shirt, leaving a small hole there. And I'm like, well, son of a gun. And Genevieve's like, oh, yeah, I don't know. Those are hard to fix, but I can take a stab at it. But I was like, well, let me take it to a dry cleaner and see. Like, this is the first new shirt I've bought in a long time. God, I'm making this long. I take it to a dry cleaner. I'm like, hey, fix the snap, please. I will pay you for that. And they're like, they looked at me like I came down from another planet and said, please, trying to think of
fix
something ridiculous.
Shirt.
Yes. Only I have antennas in that situation.
Yeah.
So they looked at me weird. My brain went to what you heard was the first example of something crazy I could think of was somehow make me pregnant and I'm a guy so I can't get like, and then I'm like, wait, I can't just say they looked at me like I just walked in and said, please impregnate me. Then I'm like, wait, where am I going? Like all of this was cycling. I picked the worst analogy that I couldn't pull out of it in my brain during that
somebody
pause.
Be pregnant.
So I don't, anyway, they looked at me like I had a really absurd
they
request.
Look like you were a pregnant alien, but but the gender of alien that doesn't usually carry the young alien.
They looked at me like I was an alien who came down, but I'm clearly a splurg alien, yet I'm carrying a baby. And I'm holding a shirt, and I'm saying, can you fix this for me? That's the look they gave me.
Is the shirt from the Jack Daniels collection from Eli Cattleman, by the way? Because I'm looking at that right now.
Daniels collection?
I know they have a Jack. Yeah.
They have also, like, what is their fancy shirts? They have their regular shirts, and then their fancy shirts are, like, Black Label, I think. Are you seeing those?
I'm just focusing on, I got to get you one of these Jack Daniels men's shirt. Would you like the one that has an American flag that's all blacked out? It's called Jack and Stripes, and it's got a real Punisher vibe going on.
Hold off.
I have to be 21 to view this Jack Daniels branded Eli Cattleman apparel.
Oh my God. What do they have in the women? I'm looking at what do they have in the women's selection?
I'm not 21. Here? That's a problem. I'm not even allowed to look at it.
Oh yeah. These flag shirts. Not good. Anyway, though, I know you're trying to undermine me, but I stand by my snappy shirts.
I am not
shirts.
Trying
I
to undermine
good.
You.
Anyway, so I go to this dry cleaner, and they're like, no, we can't fix that. Like, you would need an old school machine, and then you'd have to, like, sew in this backing. Like, this just not fixable. I'm like, really? Yeah. You guys are professionals. So I'm like, okay, whatever. usually I'd give up there, but then I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to that other dry cleaner, that big place where they actually advertise doing repairs in Wallingford on 45th. And I'm like, that looks like, I've never been in there before, but they look like professionals. They're going to do this. It says repairs on the window, and I take it in there. The guy looked at me like I was even crazier, like I was two aliens that are splurgs, carrying an alien to term. And he's like, no, that you can't do that. Like, do you have any suggestions where I can go to fix a snap in this town? He's like, no, that's not fixable. I was stunned, just very stunned. So anyway, I wrote to Eli Cattleman, and I said, hey, listen.
Dear Mr. Cattleman.
It's Mrs. Cattleman, you sexist son of a gun. You know, the cattleman was a woman. They responded right away. It was very nice, good customer service. I said, hey, listen, I love this shirt. Snap came off. I was going to buy more shirts from you, but I don't know if this is like kind of a standard thing. Tried to get it repaired. Couldn't. Any chance you could send me a replacement? They were very nice about it. They said, we don't have that shirt in stock anymore, but how about this one? It's close. And what I liked about it was the woman I was emailing with clearly had just like gone downstairs into their cattleman supply and like grabbed a shirt and like hung it on her file cabinet and took a photo of it. It was like really, really good personal customer service. I loved it. And so I will throw that out there. Eli Cattleman, great customer service. Situation with snaps, I'm not sure. They send me the new shirt. I have that now. I like it, but I'm still wearing the one that's missing one snap. It's missing a snap. It's kind of it's near the top, but it's a middle one. So if I snap the top snap, skip the second one down, and then snap the third snap, then you can kind of ignore the fact that I'm missing a snap, and I can still wear it around the house like my tight-fitting muumuu or whatever. Well, the other day, I'm watching TV with Genevieve, and another snap came off that same original shirt. Okay, this story is getting way long and way confusing, but the original shirt that I bought, now two snaps have come off the shirt. And this is where the debate comes in with me and Genevieve. I'm not super upset about the second snap coming off this shirt. I got the replacement already. I'm going to throw it away. But Genevieve says, well, maybe you need to stop snapping and unsnapping the snaps all the time, which is fair. I'm an adult. I shouldn't fidget so much. Having said that, I believe that that is victim blaming. I believe a shirt should be able to be snapped and unsnapped many times, especially a new shirt. Okay, maybe I stress tested it more than an average shirt, but let's say 5 years down the line, I gave it 10 years worth of wear and a snap falls off. That's one thing. But for two snaps to fall off of this shirt within, I don't know, 2 months of owning it, while I own another snapped shirt of the same brand that I've had for a decade and is possibly a decade older than that, I feel like I should not be blamed for the snaps falling off that shirt. That's
and
my story.
The first one, the original shirt, the snaps are still fine, right?
Yeah, the old one, the one I got at a thrift store. I'm wearing it now. It's beautiful.
You're basically doing a side-by-side, and I think that, you know, peace and love to the Eli Cattleman Company, which also I'm on their Black Label collection. And you know who one of their models is? None other than our friend Charlie Crocker, who's a great musician and played on Livewire. And I know that Mike and Emily down there in Austin are big old fans of his. Mm. He's one of the models. So what world. Well, he's like on the banner of the Eli Cattleman Black Label. But yeah, like, I mean, peace and love to this company. But my guess is that they used to make things differently back in the day. That's why the first shirt you have can handle your nervous fidgeting and why the newer versions don't. It's probably some change in the materials, where it's made, how it's welded, who knows. Here's my question to you. When you say the snap is broken, is there a – so the snap came – so there's still a little piece of metal – on the part of the shirt where the base of the snap would be. Is there anything there, or is it just a hole in the shirt?
Just a hole in the shirt. What came off the shirt in both cases was the back part of the snap. So if you were to look at me head on, you would still see the little pearl covering of the snap on the top. Yeah. But behind that, the nub, there's just two holes in the shirt there.
And did you still did the entire snap, did the nub and the thing holding it on the other side of the shirt all pull through?
Yeah, it's just the metal thing completely came out.
Got it. But it's still intact. It didn't separate. The back plating of the snap and then the front part that has the kind of nipple on it, those two things didn't come apart. It just pulled all the way through the shirt.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
Could you work with something that's magnetic?
I was wondering that, too, for the first, when it was just down to, or when it was just one snap that had come off, I thought that. Right now, and the reason this came up the other day was because Genevieve saw it, I threw it away. It's game over. It's
you
gone.
You threw the shirt away.
The first one that I purchased that is now missing two snaps. And
why would you throw it away?
Because it's missing two snaps. And so now, like, if I wear it, it no longer could be snapped at all. It'd just be, like, open down to my low chest area, my sternum.
What if you just sewed a button on there?
Well, then you would have had to somehow pop out the snap with the pearl in it, and then and that would leave a hole too. It's not they're leaving holes in the shirt.
I just feel like throwing it out was so extreme, considering you've had the other one for 10 years. Like I would have just like even if I didn't know how to fix it, my response would have been to hang it in the closet and think I'm going to come up with a creative solution. Which, by the way, I wouldn't, but I would think I was going to go from like this is now literally this goes in the trash. This is leaving my life forever. That I don't know why that feels extreme to me.
Well, it didn't feel good. I don't usually do that either. I think it doesn't feel good to you because we're not used to I think wearing out clothes. To a degree that they're unwearable, like usually you will take them to Goodwill or something. Usually I'm outgrowing my clothes because, of course, I'm a growing boy. Or, you know, maybe I just don't – I realize, oh, I bought that on a whim and it doesn't really fit my style, so I'll take it back to Goodwill. And there is something about, like, just taking, especially like a button-down or a snap-down shirt and just saying you're going in the garbage now. You're no good to anybody. You're no good to me and you're no good to anybody, so you're going in the garbage with the cat litter. It's not a good feeling.
Yeah, like, why not just give it to Goodwill? I know it's missing a couple things, but there might be a crafty person who knows how to fix it. I bet you also – I'm sorry, Andrew. I'm not trying to victim blame here, but if I could just blame you for a quick second. I bet you that the – I am very, very certain that we are going to get responses from our crafty listeners who are going to have ideas of either, A, how to fix it, or, B, offer to fix it themselves, because there is no end to the creativity of our listeners. And I bet you that they will be like, oh, I can fix that for you. I've got that. I've got a grommet machine or something that can fix this for whatever reason. But now that ship has sailed.
Yeah. And also, I don't think, I mean, I'd love our listeners, but I don't think that I would have been really in the business of taking the shirt, shipping it to a listener so that they could fix it and ship it back to me.
I have the listeners tailor all of my clothing.
Oh, do they?
These Champion sweats I'm wearing right now.
Yeah.
I had darting put in.
They're the ones who sewed pink on the butt?
Yeah. Well, it was already there, but I'd worn them so much that the K was coming off and just a pin. Yeah. So somebody put the K back on for me, which I appreciated. Nice.
Anyway, I kind of regret bringing up that story. I don't think that was all that interesting.
I don't regret you bringing it up, but I just honestly, I'm heartbroken now because I feel like you're going to. Can I ask you another question? And I don't want to get too into your financial biz, but do you mind? Can you give us a ballpark of how much the first shirt was, the one that came up?
And also keep in mind, I think the fact that they completely replaced it, right?
Right.
And I like the new one, so it's kind of like, well, and by the way, here's the capper on it. Because the customer service was so good and because I like the new shirt that they replaced it, I figured, well, I owe them one, so I bought one more shirt from them, a long sleeve shirt that I just got an email is arriving at some point today before 5:45. So I'm going to be a little bit more careful with the snaps. But I was like, you know what? I got a long sleeve on the way. They've replaced the short sleeve one. Why would I hang on to this thing that I can't wear anymore that's missing two snaps and is befuddling all of the repair shops in the greater Seattle area? So did you ask me a question that I forgot?
How much was the original shirt?
You know, I can't really get into finances on the show or hypotheticals. No, I don't know. Like with shipping and everything, it was like 30, maybe 35 bucks or something. I did something that I had never done before, which is I was just like, hey, I wonder if they have promo codes. Are there websites that just list promo codes for this? So I just typed in.
Did you try TBTL for the hell of it?
I didn't, but I did type in like welcome or new customer. And I got like, I was like, oh, I get 10% off. And I was like, oh, that saved me $2.50. I guess that's not.
So
nothing.
It worked.
That's like, yeah, I got about five pull tabs out of the promo code that I
did
found
you,
online.
Here's my question. Did you get those promo codes from some website or were you just going with your best guess?
No, I went to a website. I was like, I had never done that before. And then clearly that's a whole thing. I just don't do much online shopping. I was joking with Veeves. I bought the second shirt on Saturday, and I was grabbing the credit card. She's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm just going out to do some online shopping, because it's like I just don't do it that much. It felt like I got the credit card and now I'm going shopping today. And then I just bought one $30 shirt.
That world of promo codes, I have like tried that. It's never really worked for me, so I kind of lost my interest in it. But there have been times where, particularly if I'm buying something that's a little bit bigger ticket, or I'm booking a hotel for a vacation for like a personal trip or whatever, where I'm just like, God, wouldn't it be great if there was just. Because you'll see sometimes they'll be like, do you have a promo code? And I'm like, I don't, but I wish I did.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I have this dream that there's going to be some promo code that's going to be like, oh, guess what? Now it's half off.
Yep.
So I've cruised those websites. I don't think it's ever really worked for me, but I'm glad you got your couple of bucks off. That's pretty sweet. Until the day I die, which, let's be honest, will probably be pretty soon, I will rue you throwing out that shirt, Andrew. But I guess I can't second guess your life.
I think that what the people were seeing was a mass produced shirt that probably, you know, I went back to Eli Kettleman, and again, the customer service really won me over, but chances are like it probably just isn't that high quality. They're probably just not making them the way they used to, and they probably looked at this and they're like, yeah, that was just kind of shittily made and there's not much you can
maybe
do.
Got
there's a
lemon.
Hole there. Yeah. Or maybe it's just the kind of quality of mass produced stuff. I don't know. I'll tell you how these new shirts go. The replacement one seems fine so far, but I think they were just
What's the snapping about? Like, I wonder why that was the go-to for that style of, like, Western shirt as opposed to buttons. Is it a cowboy thing? Does it have to do with bucking a bronc?
Mm-hmm.
That's not really how that works. Riding a bucking bronc and, like, if you know, or like a, maybe you're rounding up some steer and if you get caught on one of the horns of the steer, you need your shirt to really just be breakaway. Like, how did that become the thing?
Yeah, that's why I wear them, because of the same with the reason I wear breakaway pants too, is because when I'm at the cowboy bar and I'm on that, you know, I've never been on a real bucking bronco, of course, but when I'm at the bar and I'm
Saddle Ranch,
and I do that, I need to make sure that I don't hurt myself by getting caught up in the machinery, so I just make sure everything is breakaway.
When we go back to some normal version of life, and when people can congregate, and when it's safe, and bars and restaurants are sort of operating normally. And let's say you and I are in LA, maybe we're doing a show down there or somehow. How much money would it take for me to get you on the mechanical bucking bronco at the Saddle Ranch on the Sunset Strip?
I've never been there. What is the crowd like? Is it like really a cowboy crowd?
It's real public radio. It's mostly like got a Paris Review fans. No, it's like sorority girls and frat boys.
Okay, so it's not actually like kind of okay.
No, it's not country western. It's not where the cowpokes actually go. It's where people who want to drink a lot of alcohol and be in a sort of allegedly Western environment go.
It's like the movie where they dance on the bar, where the sexy ladies dance
Coyote
on the bar.
Coyote Ugly.
Exactly. Is that kind of the vibe?
It's very much that vibe. Very, very much that vibe.
Okay, good. Well, that's good. That sounds like my kind of place. I think it would cost you a lot of money to get me to do that, although I would be more likely to do it there than if I was in Arizona and it was actually a cowboy bar. You know, like I'd be like, well, whatever. Like these people don't even see me anyway. Or they'll be like, hey, did you see that middle-aged man break his ass on the bull? Yeah, that was pretty funny. Yeah, look, he's rich now. He's flying away in a helicopter because Luke Burbank just gave him tons of money to do that.
Good. That's the right answer, Andrew. I'm finally, you give the right answer on this show for something.
And then I'd throw a shirt away just to piss you off.
I would be mad.
All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. It's not from a female.
All right, we didn't get to the mysterious water creature in Massachusetts, but we'll talk about that tomorrow. And also, time permitting, the Peru, the nation of, opened Machu Picchu, the most sacred and most popular tourist destination in their country. They opened it for one tourist.
Oh.
One tourist.
The Pope.
So that no. It'd be great if it was just the Pope. No entourage, no security. Pope was just like, hey, man, could you guys do me a solid? Anyway, we'll talk about that tomorrow.
I love the
well.
Way the Pope talks, too. Hey, man.
Pope is pretty down.
Yeah, I actually almost forgot about this, but do you remember yesterday I made such a big deal?
Yes.
That listener Katie experienced something that she heard on the radio that she describes as the craziest thing, and she had recorded it on her phone, just using the video and audio function on her phone, and sent us the tape because she couldn't figure out what this radio station was messing up as she turned on her radio and heard somebody doing something weird. And she sent me links to it, but Vimeo had pulled her links down because she thinks that me. Well, here's what she said. Ugh, Vimeo flagged my account, probably because the stupid Jason Isabel. Is it Isabel? Jason Isabel song that comes on at the end of one of these videos for like half of a second. But
wow.
Here I've re-uploaded and it should work now.
That's
Man.
Some very effective anti-piracy software.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, the links do work now. So I'm going to read Katie's email directly. I just experienced the craziest thing. Figured you might appreciate it. I was sitting in the car with the radio on, and the radio host started reading a commercial in the strangest way. I caught it on tape. We think maybe she didn't realize she was on the air or played the wrong version of some file. Okay, Luke, I'm going to play this for you now. There's two files.
I'm gonna turn the music down. I want to hear this in its full unvarnished audio glory so we can figure out what's going on.
Okay, let's start with this one here.
Pleased to have all the
hey, something weird's happening on the radio.
Deliver your meds to your home or workplace.
Close it off.
If you live out of town, you can mail them.
Oop.
Kindness, efficiency, and professionalism has never waned. Kindness, efficiency, and professionalism
is
has
this
never
really
waned.
Happening?
Thank you for getting your meds local.
What is
Thank
this?
Thank you for getting your meds local. Thank you for getting your meds local. The Hutch Medicine Shop in Midtown. The Hutch Medicine Shop in Midtown.
What is happening?
During
I think they don't know they're alive.
The Hutch Medicine Shop has taken extreme measures.
I know exactly what's going on, by the way.
Yep, me too. I'm going to end it there because I think that we get the vibe of it. I know exactly what's going on. I will allow you, though, Luke.
Well, I think that this person was giving him an A, B, and C. Like when you're doing voiceover, depending, and my guess would be that now I'm going to really speculate. So an A, B, and a C is just you do the same line, but you do it. So like at the beginning of every show, I have on my show sheet, hey, Andrew, how's it going? And if we were doing a voiceover session, I said, okay, they'll say, can you give me an A, B, and C? I'd go, okay. Hey, Andrew, how's it going? Hey, Andrew, how's it going? Hey, Andrew. How's it going? So that would be an A, B, and a C. And what you're hearing is that voiceover person just doing an A, B, and a C on every single line. But clearly the file got saved wrong, so they're playing the raw file, the A, B, and C. The part where I'm going to get very speculative is there are a lot of the voiceovers now for commercials, just because it's cheaper, are people that are hired off the internet through these various websites for voiceover and something called VoiceBank.
And so my guess would be that that person reading for whatever the Hutch pharmacy, medical something, was somebody hired off of the internet. They had recorded it, put it up on VoiceBank or some such place. It got pulled down by the client and then just ended up, you know, playing in its unedited form.
I think you're half right. Obviously, the part about somebody just doing a read and recording.
Right. By the way, you're half right.
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. I'm doing all right. Thanks for asking. I've been better. Thanks for asking. Just to close the loop on those questions you threw out there before. This has happened to me before. So I'm looking at the radio. So there's like kind of a video of Katie's radio, and I can't tell if this is an HD station or it looks like it might even be satellite radio, but I think what's happening is this person is actually probably doing the read live.
Oh,
and my guess is somebody somewhere, the way these things are routed in multi-studio and especially multi-channel radio stations now is you can route a studio to be on the air accidentally. Here's an example. A long time ago, so this is before I had my radio show on Cairo Radio at night, but I was applying for the job. I was actually applying with our friend Tom Wassel. He and I pitched an idea of doing a nighttime show together. So we had to cut a pilot of a one-hour show and what it would look like to hear us banter about soft news topics for 3 hours. And so we did it on a Sunday, and we went into Cairo Radio, and we used one of the studios that's just a production studio. It's just like an off-air production studio, not the on-air studio. And so we did our whole show. We probably even left the mics open while we chatted in between the segments, like, hey, what do you want to do here? Do you want to move this to the A? Whatever. We're having a conversation and doing a fake radio show for probably an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Oh, no.
I later found out that people who were streaming the pregame show, so this wasn't on the actual radio, but if you were listening.
Is this what got Dory fired?
Yes. If you were listening to like the pregame show on a mobile device, somehow things got routed in a way that people were hearing Tom and I do our fake radio show. And I think it was a 10 who pointed that out to me. I think a 10 wrote in and said, hey, I heard you and Tom doing a show. It sounded like you guys didn't know you were on the air, but it sounded really good, which I appreciated the encouragement.
Do you need an extra little bit of loving?
My guess is there's some, you know, there's this is probably at Sirius FM or somewhere else, wherever this is coming from. Somebody had something routed wrong and a production studio went on the air instead of the on-air studio.
I see. So it's just somebody probably, because I didn't have the visuals. I didn't understand that we were talking about satellite radio or whatever. So is that what you're seeing? Because you have the video. Does it look like it's satellite radio?
Yeah, I think it's just like a picture of somebody's car radio, of Katie's car radio, but it looks like it's satellite. Yeah, they're listening to the Spectrum, which is a rock station.
Sure.
Yeah,
yeah.
And Jason
Spectrum,
Isbell,
right.
And Dreamsicle is.
I thought that Spectrum was. I always confuse that with the Spectrum with a coffee shop one. Maybe that's different. Maybe that's premium blend or something. Anyway, that's a much more likely scenario, which is, like you said, somebody is going out over the air and they don't realize they're doing it, but they are doing that kind of read in a bunch of. I'm actually afraid to do that very much because it hasn't happened too many times, but like if we're putting an episode of Livewire together, well, first of all, that's just not really the way that I talk on that show. But I live in mortal terror of a pickup being left in, you know?
Mm-hmm,
so, like, you and I mean, this is something you and I share, Andrew. Like, if we decide we're going to take something out of the show, we will leave, like, 5 to 10 seconds of dead air so that there's a giant gap on the file. So later on, there's no way of missing it. But, like, when I on the occasion that I hear a pickup on the radio, like, where somebody started over and it's, you know, it chills me to my core for whatever reason.
Oh, my heart stops. My heart stops. But I also perk up because I also want to hear if they're going to do it again.
Yeah. All right. Well, you said there was two pieces of tape with that. There was two videos.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we could play more, but I think it's more of the same of what we heard. That woman doing her doing her reads. I did have.
I had a. I'll do this for before tomorrow's show. Okay. I need to find out if the Domino's pizza that I call and occasionally order from, if the names of the people that are preparing and quality checking my pizza, if their names really are Brody and Cody,
right?
or if that's just something the computer generates. So I need to call them. But I meant to do it all day yesterday, but I was embarrassed because I couldn't think of a – this, in case you missed the show the other day, our friend, listener Jamie, down in Mississippi was pointing out that the Domino's that she orders from appears to have primarily black employees. And she mentioned it's a great spot. She loves it. They're real good at their job. But it would seem unlikely that like four of them are named Cody or Brody.
Or that every single time it's Cody
it's
who's doing
possible,
her
offer. Possible, but it just seems unlikely. And her theory is that maybe that's a certain whitewashing by the software, the Domino's software, of giving these seemingly white and I guess then to some people's minds, quote unquote, you know, more relatable names. And so I need to call the place in my neighborhood, but I don't know how to. Do I just say, hey, I'm trying to settle a bet. Is everybody there named Brody? Like, how do I broach the topic?
And I also wonder, and this is me probably making things too
complicated. Hey, is your software racist?
Yeah. I wonder if they're the right people, because in a certain way, like, I almost feel bad from, like, if especially if they're, like, busy and they're doing a bunch of stuff and they're, hello, just want to take your order. They're already wondering why you're calling instead of just, you know, punching it in online or using their app. And like, now you're already taking up their time by calling them. I just wonder, is there a more corporate – but then you're going to get more spun if you call somebody.
Oh, yeah. No, I got to go straight to the Brody on this.
Yeah, right. Go straight to the Brody.
Like, if I've learned anything from my years of being a journalist and a radio producer, to call corporate, I'll never get a straight answer out of them. Yeah. But I will get a straight answer out of a 19-year-old kid who's just, you know, throwing another batch of buffalo chicken poppers into the fryer.
Offer to buy him some beer if he tells you the truth.
Yeah, that'll be good. But I should just show up with the beer in hand and maybe some adult magazines. Hey, anybody want a good time?
No. Hey, can I? I know we're kind of going along here, but I had a nice little story that I thought you would find funny from listener John. Do we have time for it, or do you want me to keep it for tomorrow? Okay, well, John starts this email very kindly. He says, thank you for the many hours of joy that you have given this old man, especially back in the summer of 2017 when I traveled home to northern Minnesota when my mom, who was 99.5 years old at the time, passed away, sadly.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The trip between the hospital and my sister's cabin where I was staying was about 35 miles one way on some of the darkest roads you can possibly imagine, and the banter between you two, well, he's joking around. He says the banter between you and Luke, the less likable one, made those trips tolerable. Obviously, joking about the
likability. Could you please try to adjust that stuff before you read it on the air?
I did, and then I went back and I wanted to rub it in your face because you're nagging me about my shirt. Attached is a photo of Attached is a photo of a children's book my one-year-old grandson brought home from his daycare in Munich, and is one that you and your tens might find amusing. So he sent a picture of this, and it is a kid's book, and the illustration on the front is a mole, like an animal, right? It's an illustration of a mole, but it looks angry, and it's walking on two legs very briskly, and it's got a turd on its head.
Wanted to add a few comments regarding your mole situation.
Perfect. So the exact translation of the title doesn't make much sense, but conversationally, this book is called Who Pooped on Mr. Mole's Head? The book is reminiscent of the Dr. Seuss classic Are You My Mother, but with Mr. Mole questioning the other barnyard animals about the source of the turd on his head. When they deny culpability, he makes them poop so he can inspect their turds himself. The flies, experts in such matters, reveal that what is on his head belongs to, spoiler alert, the baker's dog. The story ends with Mr. Mole hanging his ass over the edge of the doghouse and smiling while he drops a deuce on Fido's head. My son and I couldn't think of what positive life lesson this story of sweet revenge was teaching the young readers. Perhaps in Germany, parents are expected to take the responsibility of explaining to their children the positive and negative responses to being shit on rather than having everything spelled out. Or maybe that revenge can be truly sweet. Anyway, peace and love, John Welker.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
As a children's book, and I love it for so many reasons. I've never thought about this, but, you know, moles are subterranean and they're always down there doing their thing. But, I mean, you could see a world in which they might catch a little, catch a little number two on their head because there they are. They've dug a hole in the ground. They're more or less saying, go ahead and crap in here if you're the baker's dog. So that's fascinating. It reminds me a little bit, the going around and making everyone poop reminds me of, I've brought this up so many times on the show, but the Richard Scarry story that was one of the early jokes that I really just killed me as a kid, and it was somebody has done, I forget what they've done, but somebody has I think stolen something, and they had the seat of their pants bitten out by I think a dog, and so the inspector is trying to figure out who did the crime, and so he's telling everyone, oh, in this public square, can you please, who's sitting down, he says, oh, I think you might be sitting on my hat, could you stand up? And it's all a ruse to see if they have the back of their pants missing. Mm. And of course he comes to a table and says, I think you're sitting on my hats. And the group at the table says, oh, no, we're sitting on our own hats. And I don't know why that just killed me as a kid because of how silly it would be for them to be sitting on their own hats. But, like, that was a big comedic moment for me.
Yes.
And the idea of, like, making everyone poop in this book and then you and the flies doing a little analysis. That's great. I love
having
it.
To figure it out. Yeah. So anyway, for our next
John,
fundraiser,
thanks for we'll checking in.
Giving away that book, I'm sure. So
yeah. Oh, that's what we need to do—a TBTL version of that book.
Just totally rip off the same plot. Like, unfortunately, I just feel like I'm the one with poop on my head in this book.
Wait, why?
I don't know. I just have a strong feeling I'm the mole in this one. No.
It wasn't a given in my mind, but now that you say it, it does make more sense.
It does. it does align.
Hey, so the two show titles I wrote down, you didn't seem very enthused about either of them. One was Treat Y'all's Self, and the other was something you said, For Shirtening.
Oh, well, I like what you just said. Go straight to the Brody.
Okay.
How about that? How about that?
How about that? I'm with it. Go straight to the Brody.
Okay.
All right. That's going to do it for our show today. Thank you so much, everybody, for hanging out with us. We're going to be back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you and a Blur's Day messages. So do join us for that. Till then, enjoy your Wednesday. Stay safe. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
What's his name now? Goo 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 baraba jago. What's his name now? Goo 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 baraba jago. What's his name now? He very wise in the hood below. Scott Joe Cure now. She came to feed the pain with his wildflower. Goo 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 baraba jago. What's his name now? Goo 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 baraba jago.
Power out.